Ecclesiastes 5, I want to start at verse 10. He who loves silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. Well, Solomon had huge wealth. He was probably, in relative terms, one of the wealthiest people who's ever lived. And God said this when he said, I'm going to give you this wealth. See in chapter 2 how he was able to therefore explore every avenue of human experience. He got involved in building projects, then he got involved in farming, in horticulture, in music, and sponsoring this, that, and the other. Whatever he saw with his eyes, he had. Now, most people, the vast majority of people, in fact, probably everybody almost apart from Solomon who's ever lived, is always seeking to somehow get that bit extra of achievement, that extra house, that extra car, that extension on your property, that modification of it, to go for this, to go for that. And that consumes their whole life. They work, work, work to get money, to spend on these things, and yet there's always the end of the rainbow a bit further. And the wonderful advantage that we have of reading the account of Solomon is that you see that even if you were to take all those things to their absolute ultimate end, you would not be satisfied. Now, this word for not satisfied with silver, you find it in the curses for breaking the covenant, in Leviticus 26, verse 26. So the only way to satisfaction is to go God's way. Breaking the covenant leads to not being satisfied. Now, Solomon realizes very accurately his situation. He says the eye is not satisfied with seeing. And he uses this word, as I say, for not satisfied several times in Ecclesiastes and in Proverbs. So he's like the drug addict who very accurately can analyze his or her situation, but doesn't want to do anything about it. And so it is here with Solomon. He realizes he's got all this, but it's not satisfying. And he says, verse 11, when goods increase, those who eat them are increased, and what advantage is there to its owner? Well, he had 700 wives, 300 concubines, so you can go figure the number of kids he had. And in those days, the wives would have probably had extended families who may have lived with them. He would have had to provide for thousands of people. And there'd have been plenty of sycophants, people who wanted to just get free stuff out of Solomon. And, of course, he didn't like it. Who wants to see all that, see your wealth just going endlessly on others? And then he laments several times that all you can do is to leave it all to somebody after you, and who knows if he's going to be wise or a fool. He doesn't seem to have had a very positive hope for his son Rehoboam. Well, this is also what we see today in the world, that one feature of our society is that capitalism gone wrong has resulted in a few individuals, relatively speaking, having huge amounts of money, and the majority of people being poor. So what do those really super rich people do? Well, most of them end up giving it away. That is all you can do. Because he says, verse 11, what advantage is there to its owner except to feast on them, on the wealth, with his eyes? That's all you can do, to look at it. And that's it. So you look at the apparently stellar generosity of very wealthy people, extremely wealthy people. Well, actually, what else can they do? I wouldn't say it's necessarily really generosity. It's just, well, what else can you do? Because the whole thing is so vain. Now, for people like us far lower down the ladder, of course, we haven't got there. And all we can say is that the whole example of Solomon is a sober warning against seeking to accumulate wealth. We come back to something that is very basic, and I'm glad that I not only realized this, but I do believe put it into practice for my youth, that you don't need wealth or money to be happy. Now, you'd all say, yeah, sure, yeah, absolutely, totally agree with you. But you don't. You do not need wealth to be happy. And we all know all the unhappy, wealthy people who clearly have not found happiness in their wealth. And so he goes on, verse 12, the sleep of a labouring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not allow him to sleep. And he says, verse 13, this is a grievous evil which I have seen under the sun, wealth kept by its owner to his harm. As I said, wealth does not buy happiness. In fact, usually the opposite. And yet everyone wants it. They want to accumulate it because the idea is if I've got it, then I shall be free. Well, if the sun shall make you free, you shall be free indeed. That is the only way to ultimate freedom. Well, you know, he's right, isn't he, in all that he says, but he will not translate it into practice. And he dies miserable, depressed, nihilistic, with no faith. And this is a challenge to us. We who also would say, oh yes, I agree with all that Solomon says. Yeah, I figured all that out, that wealth doesn't make you happy and you don't need money to be happy. I figured that out. Well, you figured it out theoretically. But look seriously at your life decisions, your decisions about career, your decisions about workplace, your decisions about perhaps relocation for better income, your decisions about how many hours you work if you have your own business, your decisions about what sort of quality of life you want to give yourself, the sort of area you live in, the sort of property you live in, the sort of vehicle you have, the sort of clothes you have, the sort of holiday you have, if any, the sort of food you eat, whether you eat out in restaurants, cafes, etc. Yeah, this is what money goes on, let's face it. The sort of phone you have, the sort of technology you have. Because does that make you happy? And do you really think you're going to get to a point where I've got enough, I am now satisfied? This is the myth, that there is such a point, and there is not. And we can take it, I think, from Solomon in a way that you can't really take it from most people. Because he did get to the end of the road on all these different lines of exploration, lines of experience. And where is he? He is depressed, lonely, can't sleep at night, etc. Whereas, verse 12, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much. It's almost as if Solomon sort of hankers for the life of the simple man. And yet he could have known the peace that passes all understanding from a relationship with God. So then, let's learn the theory. And, you know, when he says in verse 15, as a man came forth from his mother's womb, naked shall he go again as he came. Let's take that seriously. And he shall take nothing away for his labor. He can carry anything with him. And he says, verse 16, this is a grievous evil. And yet those words are pretty much a quote from Job 1:21, where Job says the same, that we came in naked and we shall go out naked. And what does he say? And blessed be the name of the Lord. Solomon says, we came in naked, we go out naked. This is a great evil. No, Job sees it positively. Whereas for Solomon, it's a great regret that I can take it with me. Whereas if you are not connected to all this stuff, then there's not a great evil. You're longing for the day when Jesus comes. Remember Lot's wife. Leave the city. Don't look back. But she did look back. And she was turned, as you know, into a pillar of salt. She was destroyed because she looked back. What was that look all about? Was it not the regret that I can't take anything with me from the house? That I've had to go immediately and I left it all behind? Was it not that wistful look back that was her condemnation? And yet, all the same, even if she had gone back and grabbed whatever she wanted and taken it with her, she still came into this world naked and would have exited naked and couldn't have taken it with her anyway. And so, verse 16, what profit is there in all this? In all this labor, it is for the wind. Verse 17, all his days he eats in darkness, he's frustrated and has sickness and wrath. So Here I think Solomon is getting autobiographical. He's coming to the days of darkness, to the days of his death, and he is, as he says, frustrated, and he has sickness and anger. He's weak physically, he's coming to his death, he's frustrated, he's angry. This is where it leads to, at very best, depression. Because all that you did, all that you fought for, all that you worked for, you can take with you. Whereas if your work has been for people, you take Paul, you know, the Apostle Paul. He says, what is my joy and my crown of rejoicing? Is it not even you at the judgment presence of Jesus when he comes back? You are our glory and joy. If you spend your life investing in people rather than in yourself, then sure, you can look forward to that day when they shall rise again and your labor will not be in vain because they will be in God's kingdom. So he says here a lot, talking about generating wealth, that it is all labor in vain. And I think that Paul has that in view when he tells the Corinthians in the context of talking about death and resurrection, 1 Corinthians 15, abound in the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. And I think he has in mind these verses here in Ecclesiastes 5, that labor for yourself, for the generation of wealth, is in vain. Labor is in vain. Paul says, your labor is not in vain if it is in the Lord. So then, if our life's work has not been about making me rich, but about trying to help other people, about trying to transform their lives to the glory of God, giving men and women the hope of salvation, and God blessing those efforts as he will, and people do say yes, and will come to God's kingdom, wow, that is the ultimate labor that's not in vain. And as you get older, you'll find the people you worked for, that you try to help to the gospel, who said yes, and yeah, they kept on running the race, you find they die before you do. And that's the most wonderful thing, to bury your friend who you introduced the gospel to, you try to look after them, you try to help them to grow, and they died. Wow. I can tell you, there's nothing like it. You can buy that. You totally can buy that. Absolutely not. And it's even more wonderful because this shall go on forever. It's not that if you don't do that, you won't get saved, because we're not saved by works. But my point is that, is Solomon's point, that all other labor is in vain. And where does it lead? Where does it lead you? Absolutely to nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. Whereas, as Paul says, your labor in the Lord is not going to be in vain.